Like my cell, the room was completely white with no features, aside from the table and two chairs in the center. But that was beside the point. The woman sitting before me was tall and thin, with brown hair, high cheekbones, and hazel eyes. A briefcase sat on the table between us.
"Mother?"
I asked as the security guard exited the room. My throat was parched and clenched up as I spoke.
"I see you are aware what they call me."
She crossed one leg over the other and shook her head.
"I still can't believe you're the one who did it."
"Did it?"
"Turned Grace, as you call her. And somehow Veronique, too. I have to admit, I'm surprised someone like you would be able to do that."
"Someone like me?" She casually wiped her hands together.
"You're nothing. You have no influence. You're a nobody. And you certainly don't have any special abilities. We've already discovered that. You don't have the propensity to be superpowered."
I bit my lip. I honestly didn't know what to say to her, and my only response at that moment was to yell for Grace in my head. "Grace! Grace! Please, hear me!"
"Grace is not listening,"
Mother said in my head. I gasped. "You have the same powers?" Then I remembered Veronique saying something about this. I soon found out she'd also been right about Mother's other powers. Mother squeezed the edge of the table, and the metal began to morph under the pressure. Snap! She broke off a corner of the table. Blood oozed from her fingertips as she began crumpling the metal the way one would ball up a piece of paper. Blood smeared on the sharp metal ball she was constructing. Once she was finished, she threw it over her shoulder and showed me the palm of her hand. Not only had the cut healed, but the blood had reabsorbed. Now there were just slight outlines of red in the lines on her palm. I never thought much about how a healer would work in real life, and this would have been a great introduction if it weren't for the fact that I was being held in some type of black site, and the woman sitting before me wanted to kill me, the urge evident in her dark eyes that reminded me of Veronique.
"I get it," I finally told her.
"I don't think you do. Your actions have severely taken our operation off track and caused a major distraction. I'm expecting. The new subjects will be born soon."
Mother wore a tight black dress under a lab coat, and there was no indication that she was with child. She smirked at the look of disbelief on my face.
"You really are one of the stupidest men I have ever come across. Of course I'm not physically pregnant. You must have known that Grace and Veronique were grown in a lab. How could you not know that?"
A feeling of animosity bubbled at the back of my throat.
"You know what? Why don't you lighten the fuck up?"
"Excuse me?"
"He's back."
I didn't know how long Breaking Bad Gideon would be around, but I let him say his piece.
"You haul me on a helicopter to wherever the hell we are, put me in a cell for God knows how long, and suddenly you expect me to piece together small hints based on facts I can hardly comprehend? You're a psychic. You know what's going on in my head."
I leaned forward like a badass.
"So why don't you fucking read it?"
If I could have given myself a high five and a slap on the ass at that point, I would have. But that's in retrospect. What Mother did next was one of the more unpleasant things I'd experienced up until that point. A whispery scream rang out inside my head. At first it was subtle, static even. But then it increased in volume, followed by something that sounded like a million people biting into a million apples all at once. And then the sound of metal scraping against metal only amplified. The cacophony continued, compounding exponentially until I cried out in pain.
"I guess you aren't as tough as you think. Funny, you put on the tough guy act with Angel once or twice, and you think you're one of us. Oh, you actually think you have power. Don't you realize what's going on here? What's been happening since you kidnapped Grace and Veronique? It's their power, not yours. You are nothing."
And then, to drive home the insult, she added,
"You're not even a good writer."
"She knows everything that's going on in your head. She knows your weaknesses. She knows your darkest secrets," I reminded myself.
"That's right, Gideon. And this ends now,"
Mother thought to me. "Ends?" She walked over to my side of the table, her heels again clicking on the hard floor.
"I'm most pissed about Grace,"
she said, leaning over me. It felt like every hair on my body had stood up, grown 2 inches, and was trying to pry itself from my skin in an effort to escape her.
"My little Sabine. She would have been the most powerful of them all. And you had to go and destroy her mind, take her virginity, show her the life of a pathetic normal like you. I might have let you live if it had only been Veronique. I never liked her much, too cocky. But Sabine, I loved Sabine."
"Loved her?" I looked up at her in astonishment. My lips quivered as I took a deep breath to calm myself. "You kept Grace in solitary confinement her entire life. You're a piece of shit, you crazy fuck. You didn't love her." Anxiety made it hard to get the words out without sounding like a slobbering coward.
You are the scum of the earth. You and all these fucking people here."
Her hand wrapped around my neck.
"It's funny, isn't it?"
she snarled.
"Even if I weren't superpowered, I could kill you right now. My abilities will only make your death that much quicker. And you know what, Gideon Caldwell? I think killing you would be one of the highlights of my year. Do you know how much bullshit I've had to go through because of what you did in New Haven?"
"Fight back, Gideon."
"Grace." Mother tightened her grip around my neck as I called Grace's name again inside my head.
"Grace, please."
"Fight back, Gideon."
Her voice was miles away, light years away, in a completely different galaxy. Yet I could hear her perfectly. I could feel her. I knew she was there. As Mother squeezed my neck even harder, I jerked my feet back and somehow managed to fall sideways, even with my wrists still chained to the floor. She kicked me in the stomach, brought her foot back, and kicked me again. I was wheezing now and tasted blood in my mouth.
"It seems your little cries for help have woken Grace up. She imprinted on you. I can't believe she imprinted on you. You! She's only able to imprint on one person, and she chooses you."
I still wasn't sure what it meant that Grace had imprinted on me. The first time she'd used that word, I thought it meant that she could just speak inside my head, or that we'd bonded over sex. It was shortly after we'd become intimate that she first mentioned the term. But could it mean something more? Mother grabbed me by the back of the neck and lifted me up, seat and all.
"You really think this is going to work out in your favor somehow, don't you?"
"I don't know what I think, lady. I'm just taking it one day at a time."
I wish I could have been Clint Eastwood saying that last line, but I was Gideon Caldwell, and it didn't sound nearly as tough as it should have. Mother offered me a placid smile.
"I guess I shouldn't be so angry. We have you now. We have Veronique and Grace, and neither of them will be around much longer. Grace, we still need for a little while, at least until we can replicate her. But as for Veronique, goodbye."
I opened my mouth to speak, but nothing came out. Macho Gideon had quietly let himself out of the room. Writer Gideon was back and ready to piss his pants.
"How would you like to die? Have you ever thought about that?"
she asked as she walked around the table and sat again.
"I've been thinking about how we should get rid of you. We have complete jurisdiction over you, and there really is no point in trying you before a court of your peers, or even a military court for that matter. It takes too much time. That's one thing you will know about me. Well, you won't know me for very long, but you will recognize this about me for now. I don't like to waste time."
I swallowed hard.
"I suppose putting you in a room with Angel and letting him finish the job would be good. But first, We have to get those books unpublished. I'm not stupid enough to think that the people who have downloaded it already won't still have them on their devices. But at least we can prevent future people from reading it. So, let's do that.
What? I mumbled. She pulled a small laptop out of the briefcase on the table.
Do I need to say it again? Books. Unpublished. I figured you could help me log in and do it.
The laptop powered up, and Mother turned it around to face me.
Oh, that's right. You can't use your hands. Well, I'll do it for you then.
She moved to my side of the table again and placed a hand on my shoulder. Her eyes flashed white, and something came over me. It felt like someone was playing tug-of-war with my brain matter. Mother's power would advance, then another force would respond, pulling it back the other way. The shriek of a thousand violins playing different notes all at once came with each pull of my psyche. The noise would dissipate and then reappear as it moved to the other side of my skull cavity. By the time she took her hand off my shoulder, I was completely exhausted, my thoughts like hot knives as they began to repopulate. I gasped, looked up at her, and saw her white eyes fizzle out.
In that case...
She closed the laptop and tucked it under her arm. The door popped open, and Angel stepped into the room. Chapter 22. Incest is best?
He's being difficult,
she told Angel as he approached. She placed a hand on his cheek, and Angel moved in to kiss her. It was a long kiss, a fucking gross and sloppy movie kiss, and by the end of it, I was left wondering what the shit was going on. And that was when Bad Boy Gideon decided to return. I didn't know what it was about Angel that triggered the ballsy version of myself, but my mouth came unhinged pretty quickly. So that's what's wrong with you, I told the scar-faced fucker.
Come again?
He asked as Mother stepped aside. You're her offspring. Lab-grown, sure, but you're related to her.
Yes?
Mother shook her head.
You wouldn't understand my relationship, nor my fascination with Angel.
I laughed. Maybe, but I do know the definition of incest, and now I know the definition of motherfucker. Angel dropped his hand to Mother's ass and patted it.
Should I handle him for a bit?
She smiled.
Sure, but don't kill him yet. I still need to deal with his little self-publishing empire. Keep his brain intact. And don't beat up his face too much. That's gruesome.
She left the room, heels clacking against the floor as she walked away. Just the sound of that pissed me off. Angel turned to me and cracked his knuckles. I glared at him, still not sure where my sudden confidence was coming from, but running with it.
I have to admit, Gideon,
he said, walking over to the table.
You've made it much further than I thought you would.
He placed a single hand under the table and flipped it up, smacking me in the face. My nose gushed blood, and before I could try to wipe it on my sleeve, he grabbed the chain linking me to the floor and broke it in half. Then he gripped the back of my chair and threw me into the wall. The impact knocked the wind out of me, and my chin hit the floor as the chair skidded out from under me.
Hang on, Gideon.
I didn't know if the voice was Grace's or mine. I was too shaken up, especially when Angel wrapped one arm under mine and tossed me up to the ceiling. I didn't break through or anything, but fuck, if cracking my head on the hard surface didn't rattle my brain.
More?
He asked when I crashed back down. Wheezing now, I still wasn't able to get a full breath in. My body ached, and my nose continued gushing blood. I spit some of it out, a graffiti splatter of crimson.
Are you ready to help Mother, or should I continue?
You still call her Mother, even though you're fucking her? I considered that for a moment. America once had a vice president who did that. Okay, that's okay, I guess. I wiped more blood on my sleeve.
You don't know when to shut up, do you?
He put his foot on my throat.
Last chance.
That's enough, Angel,
Mother said, re-entering the room.
We'll have to work on Grace before we work on him. She's the one preventing me from going any further.
Are you sure I can't do it?
He asked, his foot pressing harder into my neck.
That's a primitive way to kill him, darling.
She moved over to us and took his hand. Angel removed his foot and stepped beside her, wrapping an arm around her waist.
I promise you'll be the one to kill him, but not before I get the information I need. Think of a better way, though. Something that will last longer and hurt more. Snapping his neck is too quick.
You two are some sick fucks, I whispered through the blood dripping from my nose. Mother turned to me.
He's good with insults, but not much else.
She walked over to the door and knocked on it twice.
To be continued,
she told me as the mustached Merc entered the room with a black bag. He moved over to me, sat me up, and shoved it over my face. Another man joined him, and together they took me back to my cell. Once I was there, they had me stand with my back to the door so they could uncuff me. They kept the black covering on my head and left the room, slamming the door behind them. I took the covering off and found a tray of food on the bed, an apple with a bite taken out of it and a piece of bread with a loogie on top. There was also a glass of water that looked suspiciously yellow, so I poured it out, flushed the toilet twice, and waited for the toilet water to fill up. Yep, I drank toilet water and used some of it to clean the blood off my lips and face. It wasn't too bad, and since I was hungry, I devoured the apple and even ate around the glob of snot and spit on the bread. I was probably going to die soon.
You are probably going to die soon.
There, I said it. And I was 90% certain at the time that it was going to happen. So, the question then became, how did I want to go out? Gideon from a few weeks ago, hell, Gideon from a few hours ago, would have curled up on the bed and cried until he had to drink more toilet water to replenish his tears.
And what good would that do?
So, I decided to accept my fate. If this was my last day on Earth, and I was likely to die today or tomorrow at the hands of a super-powered motherfucker, I laughed. Angel really was a super-powered motherfucker, in every sense of the phrase. That got my author brain rolling. Would that make an interesting story? I thought as I lay back on the bed. A super-powered child who came from the seed of a kinda hot, not gonna lie, not on my deathbed, woman who groomed him into becoming her sex object. It would definitely rile some folks, that was for sure. If the sexes had been reversed, it would almost be a gymnast in a controversial Olympic coach biopic. But making it a woman as the older figure changed the dynamics. Oedipus as a superpowered guy struggling with the fact that he's tagging his mom? Damn, I thought as I lay there. I really need to get this idea down. I'd definitely add stats to the book and some type of game mechanics. That was my shtick. Maybe every mother he fucked gave him more power and he could level up.
That's one powerful motherfucker, I whispered, cracking up at my own joke.
What I wouldn't give to share the idea with Luke just so he could give me a what-the-fuck-are-you-talking-about face. I could see it now.
The book begins from young Angel's perspective. Let's call him Angel Rex, in reference to Oedipus, of course. I'd put a Hamlet reference in there too, but shit, I would have probably lost half my audience on just the Oedipus reference.
Or maybe... I didn't know how many sci-fi fantasy readers are big into archetypes. Anyway, it didn't matter. This was my vision, and it would start with young Angel training. I pictured him training, kicking ass, beating up Merc Secure, then Mommy Dearest coming and patting him on the head, rubbing the muscles on his neck and chest, maybe putting some conditioner in his hair. She waits until he's older, of course. Well, old enough to get a decent-sized boner. So let's say 14. No, 15. Don't want to gross people out too much or turn them away.
This is such a stupid story, I whispered. Go on.
Nope, Not Grace's voice, just my own, dumbass.
Plot the story. Escape from here.
Grace? I opened my eyes and looked around the room. Are you there? Are you there? I thought.
Please, just think something for me.
It was her. Grace!
Please, just think something for me.
I got a sudden feeling that they were hurting her somewhere near me and that my crazy thoughts were soothing her in some way. In that case, I envisioned a scene in which Angel first learns to fly. He's sitting with Mother in his room, no, her room, on her bed, and it's the first time she touches him. You are one bad mother, I whispered. Well, 15-year-old Angel gets a raging boner, and that's just about the time his flight abilities take shape. The superpowered motherfucker comes with just one touch on his inner thigh and blasts off Mother's bed, through the ceiling and out into the stratosphere. He hovers up there for a bit, looking at all the lights below and realizing he didn't have pants on, and that he'd made a sticky mess of his pubes.
Got to trim those,
Angel thinks. Yeah, I'd definitely put that line in, something a little funny and awkward.
This is such a funny story.
Grace again. It's dedicated to you, Grace. So I thought some more about the story, hoping to entertain her as best I could. Who was the bad guy? Child Protective Services? For sure. They have guys in black, because what police state doesn't have guys in black, trying to take him from Mother. Thing is, CPS is also planning to exploit him, turn him into a worker at a secret glory hole they run in Malaysia. Why Malaysia? And why a glory hole? No idea. Just seems like a good twist. As for the location, it could be any Southeast Asian country, could be anywhere. Just want to keep it interesting, right? So, CPS is trying to take Angel away from Mother so they can turn him into a sex worker. That's it. CPS, while they seem like the good guys, are actually the bad guys, the twist.
And where are the stats?
I imagine Luke asking me. Well, like I said, he gets a point for every mother he fucks, but since he only fucks his own mother, she has to change forms to trick the game into giving him stats.
Wait, the game doesn't know?
Damn it, Luke, I'm making this up as I go along. Don't complicate things for me.
And she's a shifter?
You bet your ass she's a shifter, as shifter as American Pie, whatever that means. Just like Grace. Just like you, Grace. I yawned. I didn't know how I could get so tired working out my own story, but I was definitely starting to drift off. I stretched on the hard bed, trying to get comfortable. Damn, did my body hurt. I was just about to imagine how Angel frees himself from CPS and is rewarded with a little ass play from Mother when I saw a flash in the room. Dorian appeared, a look of abject fear on her face.
It worked,
she said. Dorian, I gulped. Unsure if I was dreaming or not.
We need to go, Gideon. Now.
Why should I? But Dorian didn't answer. She reached out, touched my hand, and we disappeared. Chapter 23. Back and forth. Note to reader. Teleportation is not for the faint of heart. It literally feels as if every fiber from your body is being stripped away, shot through some type of intergalactic portal, gargled by a guy who's missing a couple teeth, and reassembled on the other side. All this to say, Dorian and I materialized in what looked like a hotel room. My first reaction was to run to the nearest restroom and vomit up the apple and bread I ate earlier. But I kept it down, my urge to vomit replaced by sheer anger at Dorian. You betrayed us! I shouted, my voice wavering. No, I hadn't put two and two together yet, and I still wasn't sure if this was real or not. It could be a dream, I thought. It must be a dream. Killer. Dorian raised an eyebrow at me.
I just saved you.
I know what I saw, I told her, raising my fists. Not that trying to strike her would do any good. Still, the gesture felt right.
Try it,
she said, lifting her paintbrush to her mouth.
But before you do, think about what I just did.
I... Maybe she was right. Why would she have teleported me out of there if... But I know what I saw, I finally said, lowering my fists. We were definitely in a hotel room. Another look around confirmed that for me. But I didn't know where the hotel was, and weakness from either the teleportation or the fact that Angel had pretty much handed me my ass had started to set in.
Just hear me out,
Dorian said. She took a step closer to me. There was something behind her dark eyes that I instantly trusted, even though every instinct in my body was screaming for me not to believe her. I saw what she'd done. End of story.
I know what you're thinking.
You don't know anything.
You don't play the best tough guy. Did you know that?
She let her ponytail out and studied me for a moment. Then she flexed her fingers, widening the elastic band, and swiftly tied her hair into a new ponytail. She was still in her post-goth punk rock getup, a leather jacket, black shorts over fishnet tights, and black boots. I go back and forth between being convincingly aggressive and not at all, I said with a sigh. But that's beside the point. What happened back at Butler's house?
It was Veronique and Grace's idea. We'd already discussed it.
Discussed what? No one told me shit. I kicked the bed for emphasis, which only served to hurt my foot. Damn, I wish I had superhuman strength.
If for some reason they came for us, I was to act like I was on their side. The you three had kidnapped me. And that's what I did. When they started attacking us, I teleported to one of the upstairs rooms. I waited for a moment and then burst out through the window. Why did you think I was bloody?
Was she bloody? I tried to remember if I'd seen blood on her, but couldn't recall. The only thing I could remember was Veronique's bloody face as Dorian presented her to me. Why did you burst out of the window?
I thought it would look more convincing. As soon as I got to the ground, I started fighting on their side. There was nothing I could do.
Why didn't you teleport us out of there?
Do you know how much energy it takes for me to teleport? I can only do it in spurts, and by spurts, I mean it's usually one or two times before I get burned out.
I thought of her stats. I wonder if that's something I can adjust. Then another thought came to me. All of my stuff, all of my life, pretty much, had been at Butler's place, which meant they'd most likely taken it as evidence. That meant they could get my laptop. But if that was the case, they wouldn't have needed me. It must have been destroyed in the attack. It made sense. There'd been walls crumbling down and explosions inside the house. My laptop had been on the table. I remembered that happy moment we were having when we were attacked. It was like we were a family or something. And then, suddenly, the world exploded, and the men came running in with their weapons, and the helicopters and the flying motherfucker appeared. Damn. It felt good calling Angel a motherfucker. I wasn't normally that vulgar, but the nickname just fit so damn well. I sat down on the bed as Dorian continued her story.
I promised them I would get you out first, that I would go for Veronique next, and then Grace.
Are you serious? The look of conviction on her face told me that she was indeed serious. The thing was, why would she go to all this effort just to double-cross me again? It didn't seem viable. I relaxed a little. Boy, did I relax a little. I had been on swords and razor blades for the last 24 hours at least.
I think you could use some rest.
I need some food and a shower, and I need a phone.
I still have a phone,
she said. I asked for her phone, and she pulled it out of one of her jacket pockets. I turned it off and took the battery out.
Why did you do that?
If they haven't already found out that I'm gone, they'll find out soon. And they'll know there's only one person on this earth who could get me out of a room like that, and it's you. She laughed a little.
There are more than one.
More than one who can teleport?
More people with superpowers who could probably get you out. That's what this is all about, right? You're going to expose them. Grace told me, you told me, and even Veronique believed it. Veronique never believed in anything when I knew her. She was a nihilist's nihilist.
I don't know if I'd call her a nihilist, but she was definitely pretty stiff when we first met. Okay, so let's see where we are. I need to get my bearings straight. She sat on the bed next to me.
I'm guessing you have questions.
I have a ton of questions, but I'll keep it simple. First of all,
Where are we?
Austin.
And where did we come from? I mean, where is the military base that we were at?
Camp Mabry, also in Austin.
And Grace and Veronique are there as well?
Dorian nodded.
But I don't know how long they'll be there. We need to get Veronique first. That's what they told me to do.
When were you all having this conversation? I don't seem to remember it ever happening. And why Veronique first?
We had it while you were upstairs going through the guy's stuff after I killed him. And Veronique is more helpful to us than Grace would be. That's why.
I beg to differ. And I'm not saying I'm having deja vu here, but I literally just went through this a couple days back.
Went through what?
A breakout. We rescued Veronique, just Grace and me.
Did you rescue her from a military facility?
No, not exactly. But paramilitary forces showed up. And that's another thing. I don't want to have to rescue anyone again after this. I think it's taken 20 years off my life trying to bust people out. We have to be smarter. We're not supposed to be captured by these people.
If we had been smarter, we would have left Butler's place.
It dawned on me at that very moment, it was Butler's death that triggered the assault. It had to be.
If Dorian didn't say anything.
Before we continue, I just need to clarify something. Was it Butler who triggered that assault? Did it have something to do with his death? She nodded.
We should have thought about that. The men I left with were talking about it, and yes, he had a fingerprint scanner that he pressed every night near his bed. He didn't press it, and that was supposed to trigger an alarm and a release of all the data he'd accumulated. But the lawyer who held the data for Butler was also working for them, for Mother. So the lawyer told him about it, and they made their assault.
I exhaled slowly. I had no idea how this was going to play out, but our prospects looked worse with each passing minute.
I have a little money in cash,
she told me.
Actually, I have a lot of money. One of the things I did when I went upstairs during the attack was take some of the cash you guys were hoarding. I think it's about $5,000, maybe more.
She reached into her pocket and took out a large roll of cash bound with a rubber band. Good. That should help some.
I need some time to rest before I teleport again. And you look like...
She smiled, showing her dimples as she did so.
You know what? You look bad, but I'm surprised you're even alive. I wanted to come sooner. I even tried to teleport there and back, but I hit the wrong cell and I had to recharge. It takes a lot more, if not all, of my energy to teleport. If I could just paint dinosaurs with gun arms out of kinetic energy and send them off, I would. I'd be able to do that all day. But teleportation is hard.
How will we get Veronique, then?
She'll be easier to get than you because you were in a long holding block. There were other cells, and as I said, I exhausted myself checking some of them. Back and forth. It was brutal. The hardest part of my teleportation was getting into the complex. And then I moved through some of the cells and got out before I lost energy. I got lucky this last time when I found you.
You aren't the only one, I said, cracking a grin at her. Angel had just beat the living shit out of me, and Mother and Angel were planning to kill me not long after. I explained to her what had happened. Don't you just love it when books do that so you don't have to reread everything? Dorian's face scrunched up.
Damn, I didn't know they were fucking.
You and me both. Anyway, they wanted to get into my publishing account and take down my books, but they weren't able to because Grace intervened. I don't know how she did it, and... I took a deep breath. Never mind. First, Veronique. That's our first target.
She'll be easy to find. In fact, I already know where she is on the base. They only have one holding cell made of plastic, and it was recently constructed just for her.
She stuck her paintbrush in her mouth and quickly made a schematic of the base, drawing a big X where they were holding Veronique. Her map fizzled as it moved to the wall and burnt into the wallpaper, filling the room with a sickly sweet stench.
We'll get her out. Just give me a couple hours of downtime.
Chapter 24. YOLO.
The first thing I did was take a long, hot shower. It wasn't the nicest hotel, and I hadn't yet looked outside to see where we were exactly. Not quite a roach motel, but there was definitely something in the way the room looked overall.
The walls, the furniture, the carpet, that told me it was pretty run down.
But it was better than my cell back at Camp Mabry. No doubt about that. I made a mental list of things we needed. A mini USB cable, food, and clothing. I still wore the vomit-stained Houston Texans t-shirt I'd picked up back at the mall in Longview. I definitely had some swamp ass going on, and my jeans were stained with my own blood. I looked like I was auditioning for a role in a Hulu Flicks dystopian movie. So, as soon as I got out of the shower and got dressed again in my dirty clothes, I asked Dorian if she was ready to go out.
Yeah, for sure,
she said from her position on the bed.
I'd love to eat and get some new clothes.
Dorian had more of a personality than Veronique, and she wasn't as naive and innocent as Grace. My guess was that she'd been out a lot more, especially since it would be hard to keep a teleporter locked up. We could both use some new clothing, I told her, looking down at my shitty jersey.
Here.
Dorian tossed me the rubber-banded roll of money. Damn, it looked gangster. I'm the bank manager now. She raised an eyebrow at me.
That's how it worked with Veronique and Sabine. I mean, Grace, right?
Something like that, but only because I had more experience on the outside. She stood, smoothed her hands over her black jacket, and said something about the temperature in the room. I thought it was hot, too, but that jacket must make it worse for you.
Yes, but I'm wearing it as a disguise, sort of.
A disguise? She took off her jacket to reveal full-sleeve tattoos on both arms. You name it, she had it. Skulls, dragons, dice, Japanese waves, Sailor Jerry's iconography. And somehow she'd managed to fit it all on both arms. But there was nothing past her wrists. I had never noticed it before, likely because she was always wearing that jacket.
You don't like them?
She pulled the jacket back on. They're hot as hell. I've never been brave enough to get tattoos.
It's not that painful,
said the super hot punk rock goth emo you name it subgenre chick in the leather jacket, tank top, and fishnet stockings.
Only problem is, I'm a little more obvious when I'm showing them off.
Sure, it's the tats, I thought.
What?
She asked as I gave her a funny look. You know what? Never mind. Keep that jacket for now. We'll get a long sleeve shirt or something when we go shopping. Or maybe a lighter jacket. I know it's hot as balls out there. I never thought I'd miss New England so much.
Hot as balls?
An expression about testicles and how spicy they can get in the heat. At least I think it's about testicles. It could be about actual balls. Beach volleyballs are pretty hot. Rather than go down that rabbit hole, I busied myself making sure the door was locked behind us and we headed downstairs. It was a creaky old hallway, and we passed only two other rooms before we hit the stairs. The receptionist, an older Mexican woman with gray streaks in her hair, greeted us with a grunt. She gave me a double glance, having not remembered seeing me go up to the room. You were in the restroom, I told her. Satisfied with my answer, she shrugged and went back to her smartphone, which gave me an idea. Hey, so I'm going to be honest with you, I said to the receptionist. We're kind of off the grid, and we need a cable. I reached into my pocket and pulled out $40. I knew the mini-USB to mini-USB cable couldn't cost more than $5, but I wanted to give her an incentive to cooperate.
Okay,
she said, looking at me suspiciously.
All I need is for you to order us a mini-USB to mini-USB cable,
I told her. She was a millennial, which meant she was in her 50s or 60s, which meant she definitely knew how to quickly order something like that. Do you have Amazon? She snorted.
Who doesn't?
Yeah, that's a good question. Okay, just type in mini-USB to mini-USB. She pulled up the app and did as I instructed. When she tapped her purchase button, a notification popped up telling her it would be delivered within 2 hours. Perfect, I said and slid the money over to her. Also, do you know where we could go shopping and get some food? She eyed me skeptically for a moment, then finally said,
You're on South Congress Avenue. We are about a mile away from more expensive food and shopping. If you want something cheaper, you can go to South First Street.
Can you call a cab for us? Sorry for the inconvenience. We just don't have phones.
Do you need a phone, too?
Actually, that's not a bad idea, I said, and plunked $300 more on the counter. Anything that doesn't require much registration. A smartphone and a couple of prepaids, too, would be best. She found what we needed online, verified that it would serve our purposes, and ordered it.
Now, about that cab.
She whistled, and a heavy-set Mexican guy with dark eyes came from the back room.
Listen, mijo, I want you to drive these people around and they will pay you.
Sí, abuela,
he said.
Make sure to take good care of them.
Sí, abuela.
Does he speak English? I asked. He looked at me like I was an idiot.
Sí.
I glanced at Dorian and back to the grandmother behind the counter. So that was how we ended up with a chaperone that looked like a member in a drug cartel.
He led us out to his car, which I wish I could say was some type of badass lowrider, but it was actually a Honda Civic with aftermarket hubcaps, and, like a gentleman, he even opened the door for Dorian.
She got in the back seat and I scooted in next to her. I would have tried to sit in the front, but he had a garbage bag full of something up there. I couldn't tell if it was closed, and it definitely wasn't food, so the back seat would do.
You want to go to South Congress?
He asked me. Having no idea about Austin or what was available, I just nodded. As long as there's some food there, that's fine by us. Also, I'm Gideon.
I'm Diego,
he said with a grunt, not unlike his grandmother's.
My name's Dorian.
He looked at her in the rearview mirror for a moment.
So, you want cheap food or expensive food?
Cheap-ish. What do you recommend?
Torchy's tacos. Not too cheap, not too expensive. Very good.
I noticed he had a Longhorn's ball cap sitting on the dashboard. Hey, do you mind if I wear your ball cap? I'll be honest with you, I'm trying to keep a low profile. He started the car and shrugged.
Fine by me, but don't mess it up. Don't get it all sweaty.
He tossed the hat into the back seat. His car smelled like burnt vanilla, mostly because of the little tree's vehicle air freshener hanging from the rearview mirror. Abuela was right. It really wasn't very far from the hotel. And looking over my shoulder at the place we were driving away from, I wondered how Dorian had found it anyway. The hotel was completely run down on the outside, its parking lot filled with potholes.
It was across from some private Catholic university called St. Edward's and seemed incongruous to the manicured campus across the street.
If I'd had my smartphone, I may have looked some of the stuff up just to see about where we were, but my little research binge would have to wait.
I put the Longhorn hat on and we continued down the street to the sound of Tejano rap.
I was starting to like Tejano music, and a little rap in there really added something to the mix. It was upbeat, and even though I had no idea what they were talking about, it made me feel happy, a little positive. True, I'd disliked it on our drive to Austin, but my little stint in military prison had made everything on the outside radiate with positive energy. And boy, did I need some positive energy at the moment. We stopped in front of Torchy's and got out of the car. Diego pointed to a side street, told us he'd park there and wait for us. The shopping center was about a block away from Torchy's, so I told him that would work. With the baseball hat covering as much of my face as I could get it to cover, we entered the hip Mexican restaurant. Their logo was a cute devil with a yellow pitchfork. All of their tacos were named, and I ordered two trailer parks, which were tacos with fried chicken, green chilies, and poblano sauce on a flour tortilla. Dorian went with a taco called Brushfire, which was Jamaican jerk chicken with grilled jalapenos, mangoes, and sour cream. It looked yummy as hell. Order two, I told her. Actually, three. Fuck, I'm hungry. Chips and queso, too. Two drinks, I said to the bearded and tatted dude at the counter. The food came, and by the time it reached our table, my mouth was watering. I practically inhaled the first taco. It was the taste of freedom. Just a few hours ago, I'd been served a half-eaten apple and a loogied-up slice of bread. Now, I was eating like Pablo Escobar. I hadn't even been a prisoner for more than 2 days, and I suddenly had a hatred for the prison system, even though I understood its purpose. I guess experiencing anything will do that to you. It levels you, makes you realize how much you have in common with other people. But the tacos, god damn, they were good. Dorian ate 1.5 of her tacos, and I finished the other half, apologizing for eating like such an animal.
It's fine. I'm sure you weren't fed very well in there.
Let's get some new threads, I said. I used a spoon to scoop what was left of the queso into my mouth, and we left Torchy's tacos, heading down the street. I wasn't one to shop at high-end boutiques, but right now I could use anything, including some new underwear. We entered the first shop and started looking around. There were some douchey shirts here, so that wasn't going to do, but they did have a pretty extensive collection of undergarments. Unfortunately, the only underwear I could find cost $20 a pair.
They're made of Lenzing Micromodal,
the female sales associate told us.
It's so soft.
I want some, too,
Dorian said. I watched as she chose two thongs and a pair of boy shorts. Yep, get whatever you want, I said as I grabbed three more pairs myself. So I spent nearly $150 on underwear. Sue me. We went into the next boutique, which mostly had women's clothing. Get whatever you'd like, and get a few extra shirts, I told her. My fuck, did it feel good to say stuff like that. I'd never gone into a store before and just told someone to get whatever they wanted. Yet this had happened several times now since meeting Grace. It really felt good to be rich, even if I was hood rich. She picked out some t-shirts and asked me which ones I liked.
R.I.P. Willie Nelson is pretty sweet. The Leslie shirt, too.
Apparently, Leslie was a cross-dressing Austin homeless man who died just around the time I was born. The shirt just had a silhouette of him, her, standing over the words, local hero. She showed me a shirt that said, Magnolia Cafe, sorry, we are open. Get that one, too. I had a feeling we'd need to get clothing for Veronique, so I wanted to have extra shirts around.
My jacket is so hot,
she reminded me as she went to the jacket section.
The female sales associate had heard what I said earlier and started telling Dorian about a form-fitting, light-ribbed sweater.
It was designed for summer weather in mind,
she said.
For people who like to cover up. And the buttons on the front allow for a little air, if you get my drift.
Dorian got that one, too, as well as a shirt that said, Keep Austin Weird. Four shirts, a ribbed sweater designed for summer weather, whatever the hell that meant, and two pairs of black form-fitting jeans later, we were down about $500.
Next stop was a men's shop, and while I wasn't going for the dapper mustache-and-tweed jacket look, of which they had plenty of options, I was able to find some t-shirts and some good Levi's.
I chose one t-shirt that paid homage to the short-lived hockey team Austin once had, the Austin Ice Bats. I decided to get two pairs of jeans, knowing full well that I might not be able to get clothes for a while. I also got some fancy-schmancy socks, argyle, with the word YOLO written on the heel for some reason. If ever there was a word to define my life choices. The clothing cost about $250, which was at least cheaper than Dorian's purchase, but still pricey. We were burning right through that $5,000. But YOLO, right? Dorian and I were just about to head back to our car when I saw the candy store. I had to partake, and I was glad I did, because the candy was delicious. We got about $50 worth of candy, which was a joke, and which no man or woman should ever purchase. But I needed something. Yet, as much as I tried to hide my anguish from earlier with shopping, I knew retail therapy wasn't going to cure the after effects of what I had just gone through. Candy would help, though. Diego took us back to the hotel. I tipped him $60 and gave him all the candy. We'd already eaten enough to get the shakes. As we passed his abuela at the counter, she told me that the USB cable and the phones had arrived. I took the package from her and we hurried up to our room. Glad we're back, I said after I shut the door and locked all the bolts. I know you need some rest, so why don't you just lie down for a moment and I'll plug in and see what I can fiddle around with. Dorian set her packages down.
Do you mind if I change?
No, definitely. Do whatever you'd like. Little did I know that meant she would take off her pants and jacket right in front of me. I started to look away, but she only laughed.
It's not like you haven't seen a woman naked before, right?
Sure. Do whatever.
You already said that.
She peeled her underwear off and changed into one of her new thongs. Then her top came off and I gulped. I didn't know when I'd become such a horny bastard, but what could I do?
She put on the R.I.P. Willie Nelson shirt and lay down on the bed.
Good. I'm glad you're comfortable.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, sure. Who wouldn't? But let's get down to business here. I plugged into her neck, and the password screen came up. Shit, I whispered as she turned on the TV. I was just about to panic when I saw that the password had auto-filled. Thank you, autofill. Passwords were such a bitch. Due to an increase in cybercrimes, everything these days required some intense password that involved at least 10 digits, and companies had started rolling out a rule that you couldn't use the same password for another login. There was even a group that had been put together that checked to make sure you weren't doing this. Of course, it was all part of the FCG's $6 billion war on cybercrimes. Point is, I hate passwords. I went straight to her abilities folder and opened up the teleportations subfolder, creating a shadow box with four dials. I looked at the options for a moment, wondering if I could adjust the recharge speed down a little bit and increase the restoration speed. Hovering over the option told me that it decreased the amount of time she needed to recharge from teleporting. Also, we would possibly have to increase the radius of her teleportation ability, especially if we needed to move a larger object. At first, the options looked like this. Telesphere radius, 2. Conscious spatial awareness, 10. Recharge speed, 6. Restoration speed, 6. By the time I had finished, they looked like this. Telesphere radius, 3. Conscious spatial awareness, 10. Recharge speed, 5. Restoration speed, 6.
I feel a lot warmer.
Dorian looked at me.
Touch my head and you'll see what I mean.
I did, and noticed it was a little warmer than it should have been.
My heart, too.
She moved my hand down to her chest, directly over her heart. It was thumping rapidly now. Okay, just breathe for me and let me play around a little bit longer. I selected her energy ability and took a look at it. Main, ergokinesis. Overcharge, 6. Charge capacity, 4. Charge integrity, 3.
I was about to close the shadow box when I remembered that her overcharge was at 2 the last time I saw it.
Now it was at 6. So, either adjusting the restoration speed or the telesphere radius had increased her overcharge, which was affecting her vitals. Of course, I tried to turn down overcharge just to see if it would work, and it did not. I then turned down charge capacity by 1 point and asked her how she felt. Main, ergokinesis. Overcharge, 5. Charge capacity, 3. Charge integrity, 3. Her eyes lit up.
That's a lot better. What did you do?
I decreased the amount of time it takes you to recharge so you can teleport larger objects. Doing so caused your overcharge dial to increase on its own, which is akin to heating you up, from what I could tell. To fix this, I decreased your charge capacity, which means you won't be able to make objects as large as you had been. She considered that for a moment.
But making larger objects may be able to help us more,
she finally said. I agree, and adjusting either the charge integrity or the charge capacity up could also help us. But if we do that, we have to adjust all your teleportation abilities down. Right now, those are the abilities we need to get Veronique out. That's why I wanted this cable, so I can adjust in real time.
So can we rest now?
Sure. I'm bugged out as it is. Long day, right? I looked awkwardly around the room. Dorian rolled her eyes.
There's room on the floor. Or you could just rest in the bed with me.
Also a good call.
Chapter 25. Up and Away.
Dorian woke me 5 or 6 hours later. It was around 2 in the morning, but I felt surprisingly rejuvenated after the rest. Even though the bed wasn't great, it was a lot better than the one in my holding cell, and hearing the faint hum from the television had actually helped me sleep better. Background noise. Don't leave home without it.
I'm gonna go soon.
She stood from the bed and put her jacket on. The room was cold. The window air conditioning unit was working pretty well now. Okay, let me get ready real quick. I was in my new underwear as well, having changed into it after taking a shower.
I liked to go to bed clean, so when I'd lain down earlier, I figured I'd better scrub a dub a little before I actually dozed off.
She raised an eyebrow at me.
I wasn't aware you were going.
Why wouldn't I be going?
What exactly are you going to bring to the table here?
Dorian asked as she fixed her hair. She checked to make sure her paintbrush was with her and put it in her front pocket. You need a holster for that thing, I told her.
A paintbrush holster?
She considered it for a moment.
That could be handy. But stop changing the subject.
I can be more helpful than it seems. But to be honest with you, I figured Veronique may need to feed. If anything, I am food to her.
What if we run into people?
I thought you were just going to appear in her room, grab her, and go.
That was the plan, yes.
Then I'll go with you, and she'll probably need to feed, and she can drain me some. I've been useful in that way before, when we first rescued her.
You're going as food?
She asked skeptically. Damn, if Dorian wasn't hot in her ribbed sweater and tight black pants, which were low-cut and revealed a sliver of her midriff when she moved her hips. It was an incredibly stupid outfit to wear when trying to rescue someone from a military facility, says the guy who is currently wearing an Austin Ice Bats shirt. Yep, I'm the food.
Why do I get the feeling this is a bad idea?
She placed her hands on her hips and cocked her head at me. It probably is a bad idea, but I was under the impression I would be going with you, and, well, it's totally your call, but I think I could be useful. I don't know how, exactly, but, well, yeah, I already told you how I thought I could be useful, especially if we run into any issues. Having Veronique with some power is always helpful because she'll probably be exhausted.
Don't make me regret this,
she said and reached out to touch my arm. Wait, I'm not ready yet. I still don't have pants on. She started to laugh.
I was hoping we could surprise Veronique.
She wouldn't be surprised to see me in my undies.
Why's that? You two fuck or something?
Not exactly. I slipped into my shoes and new jeans. But that's a long story. I wasn't apprehensive in the least to go back to the facility, and I totally should have been. Maybe it was the rest. Before I could talk any more shit, Dorian touched my arm and we flashed out of existence, reappearing in a long, dark hallway. My heart jumped into my throat. This was not the holding cell. I thought you said... Dorian's eyes went wide. My stomach wasn't as topsy-turvy as the last time we'd teleported, but as we became more cognizant of the fact that we were standing in a dark hallway, it started to churn.
A red light flashed at the end of the hall, and Dorian's paintbrush went into her mouth.
A blazing circle of energy appeared as she moved her hand in the air. She held the circle of energy at the tip of her paintbrush as we walked down the hallway.
I swear this was it,
she whispered to me.
I even double-checked it.
We should go back to the hotel, I said, overcome with nervousness.
They must have known we were coming. This was so stupid.
The glass door at the end of the hallway lit up from the inside. A man moved by wearing all black armor, and before he could turn to us, Dorian put out her small beacon of blazing energy. We would have left right then if we hadn't seen a plastic pod open and the man looked down at Veronique's nude body. What are they keeping her in? I asked.
Just follow my lead,
Dorian said, steeling herself.
There can't be that many men in there, and if there's just one or two...
She stuck her paintbrush in her mouth and pulled it out again, this time painting a man in the air. She also painted a gun, which the man took, its form three-dimensionalizing as his hand touched it. We stayed where we were as Dorian sent her humanized energy creation forward. As he walked, he lifted his firearm at the glass and began shooting at it. The glass was thick, but it didn't take more than two shots to completely shatter, and for his next act, the energy man shouldered through the glass and slammed into the security guard. By this point, alarms were going off, and Dorian was making another man. She created this one to stand guard behind us, wisps of energy licking off his body as he stood strong. As we moved toward the broken glass door, her free hand on my wrist, Dorian created a floating fireball of energy. We entered the room, and she instantly flung the fireball into another man who'd been waiting in ambush. He cried out as it sizzled through his body armor and burned into his skin. The smell of burning flesh made my stomach churn, so I returned my focus to Veronique. She was in a sarcophagus. The top part encased in glass. I could tell, just by placing my hand on it, that the rest of the sarcophagus was made of plastic, and I quickly searched around until I found a button that opened the top. Veronique, I said as the top clamshelled back. We heard activity in the hallway that we'd spawned in, and Dorian went to work with her paintbrush. The tailless energy wolf she'd just created tore off down the hall.
Get her out of there,
Dorian said, worry spreading across her face. Working on it! Veronique, I said, lightly patting her face. Veronique, can you hear me? There were some cables plugged into her neck, so I figured those needed to go. I pulled them out, and as soon as I did, she sat up violently, her eyes filling with hate. She gasped when